Hey everyone, welcome to another wonderful podcast of IT Jamaican Weekly Perspective. Now, over the last 3 weeks, we had been speaking about topics that were sitting on the IT trends for 2021. We had 2 weeks of cybersecurity mesh and or two podcasts of cybersecurity mesh and one podcast of intelligent composable business. Now this week I'm going to digress a little because another topic has come up on the radar, but it was not in the whole IT trends of 2021, and that topic surrounds the whole idea of quantum computing. Now, I know persons are interested in, what is quantum computing? They hear that being bandied about, in the news reports from time to time, and they're wondering how does quantum computing differ from traditional computing, that sort of a thing. Well, tonight we're going to answer some of those questions, and I hope that this podcast will help to, clear up a little bit of doubt in anybody's mind, or just add information, as we normally do through our podcast. All right. So without further ado, let us jump right in. Now, we're just going to go through an introduction. We're going to speak about what is traditional computing, and then we're going to speak about quantum computing, quantum applications, quantum errors, and what is the future of quantum computing. All right. So, introduction. Quantum computing is a weird concept, right? Yet it has become a reality. Now, at least on a limited and experimental basis. So what is it? What can it do that traditional computing cannot? And why are quantum computers not yet available on production as production items? Now, quantum computing sounds like the stuff of science fiction. Yet to some extent, it is a reality. While it's not certain when or if commercial machines will appear, Google and IBM, plus other tech giants and startups, are competing to build the first actually useful quantum device. To understand why the prospect of quantum computing is so compelling, we can start looking at the limitations of conventional computing and at how quantum computing avoids these limitations. Next, we can look at the applications that will benefit particularly well from the technology and why it hasn't yet translated into everyday usable products. Now, traditional computing. All computers today, whether for industrial, commercial, personal or any other applications, depend on binary logic. Now, let me stick a pin here. There are certain number systems. Yeah? Now, most people in the world who are not involved with computing utilize the decimal number system. Decimal number system uses 0 to 9 as its as the numbers being used, or a combination of those numbers. For instance, 0 is a number, 1 is a number, 2 is a number. The number 10 is a combination of the use of 1 and 0. 1,000 is a combination of using 1 and 3 zeros. Right? So the number system means it's the decimal comes from deca, meaning 10. So 0 to 9, and if you count on your hand from 0 to 9, that's 10 numbers. Okay. There is also the hexadecimal number system, which uses 16 numbers. So, or 16 things. So there's 0 to 9, and then there's A to F, A, B, C, D, E, F. Right. So, and if you count from zero to F, then you have 16 digits or 16 identifiable numbers. And any number using a hexadecimal setup uses a mix and match of those 16 numbers. Fine. So we get down to the binary number system. Now, the binary system, binary means two. So binary only uses ones and zeros. And that is the logic that computers use. They only use ones and zeros. And any decision that's made via a computer is utilized using this logic, ones and zeros. All right? Now, let's get back to our narration. Now, they depend on binary logic where all numbers and states are represented by strings of ones and zeros. Irrespective of how large or complex a number is, it depends on transistor gates to implement this binary logic. Each gate is either open for a one or closed for a zero. No other state is recognized, which makes sense because they only use one or zeros. So you can't use a two. Two, they don't know two. The number two, it don't know that. It only knows zero or one. That's it. As integration technology has steadily improved, the transistors have become smaller, allowing greater processing density, better efficiency, and faster, more powerful machines. However, this miniaturization process has reduced transistors to sizes of only a few atoms across. With any further reduction in size, the transistors are likely to stop working, as electrons will start to bypass the gates, whether they're on or off. So, the first problem we're having now is that we can't build smaller transistors. Right? We're at the site. We're at the point now, or the juncture where the transistors can't get any smaller. Now, this suggests that we will meet a limit to the amount of processing power available from the technology, and that a different approach is needed for further progress. One possibility is being worked on is to use light photons instead of electricity to move information within and beyond integrated circuits. Another is to use quantum computing. Now, let me just get into logic gates here a minute so people get an understanding. In its most basic form, a computer is a collection of powered and unpowered circuits and transistors. A logic gate is a series of transistors connected together to give one or more outputs, each output being based on the input or combination of inputs supplied to it. There are three gates, types of gate to consider: AND gate, OR gate, or NOR gate. Each type of gate can be represented either as a diagram in algebraic form or as a truth table. The truth table is easier to understand, and I soon get into that and show you what I mean. Now, AND gate means that in an AND gate, it uses two inputs to generate one output. Output is one true only if the inputs are one. All right, so if you have A and B being one, then if it's going through an AND gate, the output will be one. Any other way, the output is zero. So if A and B is one, then the output is going to be one. If, however, A is one and B is zero, output is zero. If A is zero and B is one, the output is zero. If A and B are both zero, the output is zero. Right? Because what it's saying is that one and one gives you one. One and zero gives you zero. Zero and one gives you zero. And of course, 0 and 0 gives you 0. Alright, so that is the AND gate. And the truth table, if you were to draw up a truth table, the truth table would be A, B, and you would have a AND AND sign, which looks like a big D on the top of the third column. And you would simply have 0, 0, 0 for A and B, and you add 0 in the AND column. 0, 1 for 0 for A, 1 for B, 0 in the AND column. 1 for A, 0 for B, 0 in the AND column. 1 for A, 1 for B, 1 in the AND column. All right, guys? So that's really what the AND gate is about. That is how it, once you have an AND gate, that is what will happen if you throw zeros and ones at that AND gate, what is going to be the outcome. Now, the OR gate is I won't say the opposite, but let me explain. An OR gate uses two inputs to generate one output. The output is one only if both of the inputs, or only if either or both of the inputs are one. Right? So here how it goes now. For the OR gate, A being 1 and B being 1 means the output is 1. A being 1 and B being 0, the output is 1. A being 0 and B being 1, the output is 1. Only when both of them are 0, that means the output is 0. And that's the OR gate. And of course, the truth table would be set up just like the one I mentioned before, only that you'd be following, it'll be slightly different results. Right? Now, the NOT gate is simple. NOT gate takes one input and generates an output. And if A comes in as 1, it's not 1. So the output is 0. If A comes in as 0, then it's not 0. And the output is 1. So the output is exact opposite of the input. And of course, in a binary scenario, because you can only have 0 or 1, then if it's not 0, then it's 1. And that is really what it's all about. All right? Now, since you have had a little introduction to the whole logic scenario between logic gates and how traditional computers work utilizing logic gates in terms of their decision-making process, and let's get into what quantum computing speaks to. Now, the quantum concept is valuable because it allows some more than just two states, which means that it's not using a binary numbering system. That's the first thing. It relates to interactions between particles at a tiny scale, so small that the rules of physics as we normally experience them no longer apply. However, it is possible that some of the unusual and counterintuitive phenomena occurring at this level could be used to overcome the limitations of traditional computing. In quantum computing, the smallest unit of data is not the bit, but the qubit, based on something like the spin of a magnetic field. Like a bit, this can be set to one of two states, 0 or 1, but unlike a bit, it is not as simple as just being on or off. Thanks to the quirks of the quantum level, a qubit can also be in any proportionary of both states called a superposition. Sometimes this is described as being both 0 and 1 simultaneously, although this isn't entirely accurate. Rather, it could be anywhere between completely 0 and completely 1, but the catch is, as soon as we actually measure a qubit, it collapses into one of the two definitive states. So, okay, so I stand corrected. It actually uses the same binary number system 0 or 1. However, how it is actually utilized, as they're rightly saying, is that it changes state depending on what action it's performing, which is different from what is known as the traditional computing, because it doesn't traditional computing are changing states in a fluid motion like that. While being difficult or impossible to fully understand, superposition means that the amount of data that can be stored grows exponentially as the number of qubits increases. A number of 20 qubits can hold more than 1 million values at once. However, quantum computing also involves further concepts, particularly quantum entanglement. This means that unlike traditional computers that can only process data sequentially, quantum computers can process it all simultaneously, right? Which I think is what would make it faster. Just imagine you are processing 100 things, and the traditional computers process number one, then two, then three, then four, and that's a sequential thing. Whereas with quantum computing, everything is processed, all 100 are processed at the same time. That makes a big difference. Now the quantum bit, qubit. In quantum computing, a qubit or a quantum bit is a basic unit of quantum information. The quantum version of the classic binary bit, physically realized with a two-state device. A qubit is a two-state quantum mechanical system, one of the simplest quantum systems displaying the peculiarity of quantum mechanics. We can therefore deduce that with respect to quantum computing, Moore's law of computing utilizing classical physics comes to light even more, because as the transistors get smaller, there comes a point where classical physics end and quantum physics commence. All right, so buddy got that? Let me just read this the first part again. In quantum computing, a qubit or quantum bit is a basic unit of quantum information. The quantum version of the classical binary bit, physically realized with a two-state device. And the qubit is a two-state quantum mechanical system, one of the simplest quantum systems displaying the peculiarity of quantum mechanics. All right? Now, Moore's law. Explain how Moore's law works. Moore's law refers to Moore's perception that the number of transistors on a microchip doubles every 2 years, though the cost of computers is halved. Moore's law states that we can expect the speed and capabilities of our computers to increase every couple of years, and we will pay less for them. However, it's about how small the etching on the silicon chip can be, and we are down to 10 nanometers, though most are between 13 and 17. At around 7 nanometers, it becomes so small that the laws of quantum physics take over, and the laws of classical physics relied upon by conventional computers break down. Right? So if we are around 13 and 17, it means we have a couple more years. If we have 17 and we go down to 8, then I think we'll be fine. But if we can't have 13, so that's where the issue comes, eh? Now, quantum applications. This strength in particular makes quantum computing an attractive candidate for database processing, as it can check many records simultaneously. Artificial intelligence is another application that can benefit significantly from simultaneous processing. It's based on learning from experience, becoming more accurate as feedback is given. And this feedback is based on calculating the probabilities for many possible choices. For example, Lockheed Martin plans to use its D-Wave quantum computer to test autopilot software that is currently too complex for classical computers, and Google is using a quantum computer to design software that can distinguish cars from landmarks. Quantum computing also has the potential to disrupt online security and cryptography applications. These depend on large encrypted key numbers that cannot be decrypted by traditional computers trying every possible combination, because the process would take an unfeasibly long time. However, quantum's simultaneous processing capabilities could remove that protection, so new quantum-resistant encryption methods will become necessary. Which is true, because if you have 256-bit encryption based on computers, traditional computers trying to try every single solitary combination of that encryption method, it would take computers in some cases probably years to actually come up with the right combination. Whereas if you had a quantum computer that comes and can look at every combination at once, then it will take it. Then it'll take a traditional computer would take years today to do. A quantum computer would take seconds, and that's a big difference. Just look at it in that manner. One computer takes years to do something, and one computer takes seconds to do it. That would revolutionize everything that we know about computing. Every single side, the number of decisions that a computer could make in a minute would be phenomenal. It would be crazy. The world would change as we know it overnight, and that is what I believe quantum computing is going to do. We obviously have no, the name of the podcast is IT, a Jamaican Weekly Perspective. I have no perspective in Jamaica on this. We're a third world country. If there's nobody here that I believe has a quantum computer, and if even the quantum are is developing any, and if a quantum computer is developed, it probably be a couple of years before we get one. Yeah. However, the benefits of what the quantum computer would be doing, we'd probably have to push to get it faster than that, because the benefits of what it'd be doing would actually be felt by us here, you know, in a big, big, big way. And there's no way you can actually go around that, because the bottom line is that you have a situation now where simple encryption that we have on firewalls and that thing could be broken by a computer in seconds, which makes it literally useless. Yeah? And we'd have to get, as it rightly says, quantum resistant encryption methods, which would actually be a sight to see, I do believe. Right? And cybersecurity, it would take cybersecurity to a new level. Alright? Now, quantum errors. For quantum computers to become truly useful, robust quantum error correction is essential. Currently, quantum computers are highly sensitive. Heat, electromagnetic fields, and collisions with air molecules can cause a qubit to lose its quantum properties. This process, known as quantum decoherence, causes the system to crash. And it happens more quickly, the more particles that are involved. Quantum computers need to protect qubits from external interference, either by physically isolating them, keeping them cool, or zapping them with carefully controlled pulses of energy. Additional qubits are needed to correct for errors that creep into the system. Right. Now, what is the future? Quantum supremacy? It's here. Nevertheless, progress continues to be made. Google, for instance, is claiming to have achieved quantum supremacy. a milestone at which quantum computing outperformed the best of traditional computing. Google claimed that a quantum processor comprising 54 qubits was able to perform a random sampling calculation in just 3 minutes and 20 seconds. They also claimed that IBM Summit, the world's most powerful supercomputer, would have needed 10,000 years to complete the same task. Note the difference. The task that a quantum computer completes in 3 minutes and 20 seconds, a traditional computer would need 10,000 years to do the same thing. Now, even if, let us just say that Google is stretching that 10,000 years, and let us just say it's not 10,000 years, but 1,000 years or 500 years, it's still significantly different. And the thing about it is that it simply means that whatever happens, you are speaking about a new version of speed with regard to how things are processed. Now, not everyone believes in a viable future for quantum computers. Some think that the difficulties of eliminating quantum errors will simply be too great. Only time will tell if they or many corporations and startup companies investing in quantum computer technology turn out to be right. All right, so as I said tonight, this was just a peek into quantum computing and how quantum computing differs from traditional computing, what quantum computing is all about, how traditional computing actually works, as we spoke about the binary system, two numbers, ones and zeros, and the different states that actually allow the processes to be made in traditional computing. So I hope that, you know, some information was gleaned by some of my listeners with this request to, and it would have piqued the interest of persons to say, okay, let us do some research and see what happened, what can be done with respect to quantum computing. Because here what happened. Speed is all about it. As we spoke about the whole intelligent composable business podcast, it's all about speed, how fast you come to market. Whoever comes to the market first with a workable version of quantum computing is going to be leading the world for decades. Yeah? They are going to be on top for a long while to come, because that would be what I can, you see, if you remember the Industrial Revolution back in Europe, I can't quite remember which century it was. Yeah? Well, this would be a serious technological revolution. And this technological revolution will reverberate around the world for years to come. Right? So I hope that, you know, persons were able to learn something and glean some information, as I said before. And again, this was another wonderful podcast of IT, a Jamaican Weekly Experience Perspective. Sorry. Yes. So I hope that, you know, we always are using technology in the best way possible. As I always say, technology is here for all of us, so use it wisely. Now, this was a wonderful night to share some information with you, and you have a wonderful night, everyone, and I will speak to you in short order. Have a wonderful night now. Good night.